Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We've got quite a few Seahawks questions, and he's going to help us run through them. It's ESPN's Brady Henderson joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hey, Brady, how are you?
Hi, Stacy and Jake. How's it going? I'm doing well.
Good. Okay, well, obviously, easy place to start here is going to be with the Julio Jones rumors, that from Diana Russini over the weekend, that the Seahawks are kind of kicking the tires. Who knows if this is actually going to happen, but I am going to put you on the spot a little bit. Jake and I have already been talking about how realistic we think it is. I think it's like a 0% chance this actually happens. If you have to attach a percentage or how likely it is, just so fans can hear it, what would you give it?
Yeah, I was on Blue 42 this morning with Danny and Paul, and I think they asked me the same question. I think I said 10%. That's just my guess right now. I've been out of town. I haven't really had a chance to do my own reporting on this. But, you know, just from what we know about it, I mean, anytime there's a big-name player who's on the trading block or who could be available, you know, you always hear the Seahawks name attached to it because it's their motto. They're always going to look. They're always going to kick the tires and everything. So it does not surprise me at all that they are – that their name is linked to this, because it always is. And, you know, but so it could just be their typical due diligence. I think we've also seen, you know, with the huge trades that they've pulled off in recent years, that you really can't rule out anything with them. And we've also seen, you know, with the Adams trade last year, Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, they've been very willing, Jimmy Graham before that, Percy Harvin, they've been very willing to part with, you know, second and first round picks. Now, a lot of those cases were different in the fact that it was all younger guys. You know, Percy Harvin was coming off his first contract. Jimmy Graham was 1 year into, I believe, his second contract. Clowney was in his 20s. Bill Adams was obviously, you know, still playing on his rookie deal. So this would be a pretty big departure for them in terms of assuming they had to give up, hypothetically had to give up a very high draft pick. You know, Julio Jones is 32, so he does not fit the mold. But again, I've said this, made this point this morning, that I don't think it's likely just based on my surface level view of it, having not done any reporting on it yet, but with the Seahawks, you can never rule anything out.
Well, Brady, the other thing that people have also looked at or attached to is, and it was in Diana Russini's report, was Russell Wilson having conversations with Julio Jones about the potential of a trade, right? And in terms of the feeling that you got in terms of Russell's advocacy about this player, is it on the same level of what it was with Antonio Brown a year ago, or is it a little bit lighter in your mind and it was just more conversation? How would you attach those two situations? Are they similar? Are they different?
Yeah, you know, I really don't know because I haven't had a chance to dig into that myself. But I mean, like you said, I know it, you know, Russell, as you said, was very much trying to recruit Antonio Brown, as he does with a lot of players. And I could totally see why Russell Wilson would want, you know, Julio Jones to throw to go along with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I mean, what quarterback wouldn't want that? But I would just be purely guessing if I speculated on how much he wants him versus Antonio Brown. I do know that he wanted Antonio Brown. He wanted Josh Gordon back. And I imagine that he would want Julio Jones. But I also imagine that, you know, he looks at the situation and knows that Julio Jones is making a lot of money, you know, I think $15 million salary, scheduled to count $23 million against Atlanta's cap this year. Obviously, that would be different if any team that trades for him, but they would still take on a very big salary. And for an older player, I think Russell would even realize that as much as he might want him, that there's the contract and the age are two pretty big roadblocks.
Now, Brady, something that you have really warned us, or not warned us, but have alluded to, is the idea that June 1st, around this time, June 1st, June 2nd, that is a big date in terms of the NFL calendar and can have a major cascading domino effect in terms of potential players that are available. Do you still foresee that being the case as things have developed and now we're here at this point?
I would imagine so, yeah, and I've, like I said, I've kind of been unplugged the last few days, so I haven't been following, you know, who has been made available, but June 1st is typically a pretty big date in the off-season calendar, because I'll try not to get too into the weeds for the listeners out there, but it basically, it becomes easier less punitive against the cap for teams to move on from players, either cutting them or trading them. Players that are making a lot of money and have more than 1 year left on their contract, because they can basically, after June 1st, they can defer some of the dead money onto the next year. And so you typically see some high-priced players become available after that date. And I know from talking to people in the Seahawks building that, you know, they were preparing for the possibility of that being the case more so this year, because every team is dealing with the pinch of that reduced salary cap. So they were preparing for a lot of big names, or at least a lot of productive players, to become available. And they were, as they typically do, you know, setting aside some money for that event, you know, in case they want to be able to move on something that comes available. And so so we'll see. I mean, they've got, I think, around $7 million in cap space. I don't know the exact number. If they were to add a high-priced player, I think they would have to do a little bit more maneuvering than what they've already done. But we've seen with all the, you know, the void years that they've added on the deals, they are more willing than they have been in years past to kind of kick the salary cap can down the road and maybe create a little bit of a problem down the road in order to gain some cap relief this year. And again, if they had anybody who's making any amount of money, any decent amount of money, I think they might have to do some more of that.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. We're talking with Brady Henderson of ESPN, asking him a few of our latest Seahawks questions. Now, I'm curious about what's happening with KJ Wright. It's a question we see all the time, and sometimes you just want to say, hey, probably later this summer. But Pete Carroll was asked about it during OTAs. What did he say, and where do you stand on the likelihood right now?
I missed it. The likelihood of what?
Of KJ Wright returning to Seattle.
Yeah, I was not there for that, but I was following along, and I believe that he said that the door is not open, or door is not closed, or it's still open, something to that effect. And that's what I've heard behind the scenes too, is that they're not going to close the door on KJ Wright. You just don't close the door on a guy who has meant so much to that team and to that locker room. I just really think that they want Daryl Taylor to grab hold of that job, and you know, they wanted. And I think a big part of that is because they want somebody who could double as a pass rusher. And that's why they brought back Bruce Sermon last offseason. Remember, he was supposed to fill that strong side role and do what he did during his first at Seattle, which was play strong side linebacker on early downs, rush the passer on third down. And I think that that's what they want. And that's why they brought him back. That's why they're trying Taylor in that role. And so I just think that they want that guy. They want somebody who's younger, more athletic, somebody who can cover more ground. You know, in today's NFL, you need speed guys on defense. And,
yeah,
and obviously, KJ Wright still has enough left in the tank to have two very good seasons. You know, he played some of his best football the last 2 years. I just really get the sense that they want somebody younger, less expensive, and more versatile in that role.
Hey, Brady, speaking of the pass rush, it feels like one of those position groups where every single offseason lately we've been like, who's going to be the guy? Who's Seattle going to get? How are you feeling about the group right now? Do you think they've figured it out for this season?
Yeah, I think that they could maybe use somebody in the interior who can push the pocket. You know, Jaron Reed was pretty good at that, and they basically signed Al Woods to replace Jaron Reed on early downs. And you know, I think Al Woods was a good player for them a couple of years ago, but he's more of a one-dimensional player. He's a run stuffer, and he's also 34 years old, and he did not play last season because he took the COVID opt-out. So I really wonder if they might try to reinforce that position with another veteran. You know, I also think that somebody like LJ Collier, just because they have so many edge players and they have fewer interior guys, I really wonder if they could play LJ Collier inside more. And obviously those bigger defensive ends, LJ Collier and Rasheem Green, those guys, they do slide inside in passing situations, so it wouldn't be entirely foreign to them. I just think that would solve the problem of, it looks like there might be kind of a logjam on the edge, and you don't have as many interior guys. So that's one thing I could do. But that's a position I could see them adding now that we are past June 1st.
Yeah, you mentioned the interior. Now, there's guys out there, names like Geno Atkins, that people ask about all the time that stand out to them. Is that a potential player that the team could be looking at right now? And do you think that is seen as a potential fit here in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, he would make sense. He's had a very productive career, long career as an interior pass rusher. And again, I think that's kind of the guy that they can use right now. You know, Dean Lowry is another guy still with Green Bay, but you know, from what I've, you know, gathered from talking to people around the league, he seems like a guy who they could move on from because he's making some money. But yeah, that's just the one position. And Dean Lowry, I think, has played defensive end in their defense, but he's a bigger guy who, I mean, just based on his size, could probably play inside. But anyways, it's that type of guy. I think an interior guy who could give them a little bit of a pass rush just because they lost that with Jaron Reed.
Brady, are you expecting the veterans or at least more players to be here for mandatory minicamp next week?
Yeah, my assumption all along has been that they would be there for the mandatory stuff. And, you know, with the statement that they put out a few months ago, that only said, if I remember correctly, that they were just going to sit out of the voluntary in-person stuff. So they're still taking part in the Zoom calls, even though those are voluntary, but they're staying away for the most part. I know Akilah Williams, for example, that most of the veterans are staying away from the in-person stuff, and their plan, I believe, all along has been to show up for the mandatory stuff, because if you don't, now you're talking about getting fined, and, you know, nobody wants to lose money. And again, that's why I think it was an easier decision for them to forego the voluntary stuff, because none of those guys, with the exception of Quandre Diggs, have workout bonuses in their contracts that are tied to them showing up to the voluntary stuff. Well, really, nobody aside from Quandre Diggs stood to lose any money on that. And so I think that you're going to see them. I think it's going to be a normal year in terms of participation for the mandatory stuff.
All right. He is ESPN's Brady Henderson. Check out his work at ESPN.com. Thanks so much, Brady.
Okay. Thanks for having me. Take care.
You know, Jake, one thing that kept coming to mind before we jump into four down territory when we were speaking with Brady is where the Seahawks stand in the NFC West. Again, it stems from that Julio conversation of what separates you. You got to separate. You're in the toughest division in football. Where are a few areas where you see Seattle having, or maybe one each, where you see Seattle having a clear advantage, and then an area where they might be at risk in this division?
Oof, where they have the clear advantage? I mean, the obvious one in terms of the clear advantage is the quarterback,
right?
You have Russell Wilson. That is your clear advantage when it comes to your team. And I think that when you're talking about the conversation around Julio, Stacey, that would be the reason why you would go ahead and make that type of move, that you were signaling that Russell Wilson is your best asset and you are going to do everything that you can to make sure your asset has all the weaponry to work with to maximize his potential, to maximize what the offense can do, and you're really turning over a new leaf. You're really changing your philosophy, which we've seen Bill Belichick do with Tom Brady at one point in time, you know, in their tenure together. So it's not uncommon to see, or unheard of, to see a defensive-minded head coach who is very focused on ball control and great defense, you know, flip the script and change their identity. You know, Bill Belichick did it again later on in Tom Brady's career. So that would be something that you would really see and happening. I really think that they are trending in that direction regardless. But the one weakness that they have right now that stands out to me clear as day, Stacey, is their secondary. And is their ability to be able to have adequate enough secondary where they can dictate the terms to other defenses. What I'm fearful of is that they're heading into the season and this is a boom or bust moment for this defensive line. If you look at it, it is aging veterans. It is Carlos Dunlap. It is Benson Mayoa, both guys over 30. Kerry Hyder Jr., over 30 years old. You're relying on these older guys to make big-time contributions, which I think they all can do, but that's what you're relying on, and that is always a scary proposition. And if those guys can't hold, if those guys can't replicate what they were able to do a year ago, I don't think you have a strong enough secondary, particularly at the cornerback position, to hold up in this division. That is my biggest concern.
Yeah, I agree with you on both counts. And one thing I'll add about the secondary, if you're looking for a silver lining and you're a fan saying, oh, so it's all bad, I don't think every team in this division is equally set with their secondary. The Arizona Cardinals are in kind of a similar spot. They've got a superstar safety with Buda Baker, just like Seattle has Jamal Adams. And then they've got some weaknesses at corner, much like Seattle has at corner. You've got untested guys. Like, that's your big thing. You've got untested guys. They let both starting cornerbacks go in free agency. Seattle is starting with presumably two fresh guys there. I mean, we're both expecting DJ Reed to be one of those guys potentially. and he did start at times last season. But again, the one silver lining you have is that these other teams all have weaknesses too. All of these other three teams are having the same conversation where they're saying, all right, who's the best in the West? It's going to depend on who has the least amount of holes on their team or who can be most elite, right, in a couple of their better areas. And thankfully for Seattle, a couple other teams do have those holes. So it's 12:15. It's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to you, Jake. What ranking did you see today that caught your eye?
What caught my eye is a ranking that Bleacher Report put out there, ranking the top 10 receiving duos in the NFL. Guess where DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett ranked? Number 2 in this ranking. Number 1 was Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Number 2 was DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Number 3 was Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. 4, Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. 5, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. Number 6 was Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp with the Rams. Now, I look at what DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett have been able to do and been able to put together over the last two seasons. I think this is dead on, spot on in terms of them being ranked high in the top 5. These guys are special. They're dynamic. They're different in terms of their strengths and their weaknesses. But they are able to form a combination that is deadly for Russell Wilson and it can do a lot of different things. And what Tyler's been able to consistently be is that reliable target, not only deep down the field, but in short to intermediate passes as well. In third down, situational, high intense pressured moments. DK Metcalf, we all saw him explode onto the scene his rookie year and then grow even more his sophomore season as he really stepped onto the scene as one of the more dynamic receivers in the entire league. And I think that as he expanded his role, it made this offense better. And so I'm excited to see what these two guys can do this season. I think DK Metcalf has the opportunity to keep getting better. And my big key for Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett isn't going to change. You're not going to see Tyler Lockett all of a sudden just expand his game to new heights. He's already playing at the top of his game. My big key for him is staying healthy. The past two seasons, there's been dip in production with Tyler Lockett when he has gotten hurt. And if that guy can remain healthy, it's going to be a fun season.
Second down. Stacey.
DJ.
Was offense really the big issue that kept Seattle from advancing in the playoffs last year?
Let me start by saying I love this conversation because one of my favorite conversations and maybe the most painful conversation to have if you're one of 31 teams that didn't win a Super Bowl is what happened? What kept us from it? And for Seattle, I think it is fair, especially with this Julio Jones conversation, to say, was it a weapon on offense that we were missing? Was it personnel on offense that we were missing? Yeah, I mean, you could look at it and you can say if you weren't getting turnovers, if you had, a more elite defense that could hold up against some pretty solid receiving weapons. I mean, there were mistakes personnel-wise on both sides of the ball. It felt to me, though, and I still feel this way, that the biggest issue Seattle had wasn't primarily with personnel. It was with what people were doing with that personnel, which is why I feel like they may have solved some of those issues at OC. We're going to see what Shane Waldron looks like. Who knows if he's going to be better than Brian Schottenheimer, and who knows if he can solve some of those issues. But I know I'm not alone in feeling like Seattle had some great weapons that at times it did not know how to use, or at times it felt like there was a conflict with who they wanted to be on offense and kind of the opportunities they had on offense, and they couldn't quite get that to line up. So I hope that Shane Waldron is able to fix that this year. If he is, that's great news for Seattle because I don't think they need an elite caliber like pass catcher or whatever. I don't think they need to throw money at the problem if Shane Waldron can help.
Third down. Jake, where do you believe Julio Jones will actually end up?
Well, I think where he'll actually end up was said here in cut number 8 by Jeremy Fowler.
Agree. From what I'm hearing, something could go down as early as Wednesday. That's when the team could pick up the cap relief post June 1st. Asking around the league, the team I hear most often is the San Francisco 49ers. They have nearly $20 million in cap space, the Kyle Shanahan connection with Julio. But you hear that teams like the Titans are lurking. You hear some of the Rams And then, of course, the Seahawks have had a discussion, although they value their limited draft capital and want to try to keep that. Also, a sleeper here is the Baltimore Ravens. I'm told they're willing to get involved if it's at the right price.
To me, the clear-cut favorite in this is the San Francisco 49ers. There are other teams, as Jeremy Fowler highlighted, that are out there that are in this conversation, Seahawks being one of them. But the one team that is actually real deal, serious about this conversation, I believe, is Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch in San Francisco. This is the type of move for them that I believe can round out this young, talented receiver core that they have there in San Francisco and really add a dynamic playmaker to the mix for their offense to complement what they do in the running game, to complement George Kittle as well. So if you were to ask me who I believe is the favorite to land Julio Jones, unfortunately it's within your own division and it's not the Seahawks. I believe it's the San Francisco 49ers that will trade for Julio Jones when it's all said and done.
Four down. All right, Jake, we know that Russell Wilson, among other many other veteran players, are not at OTAs right now. But let's just focus on Russell Wilson. How has the communication been between the quarterback and Shane Waldron?
I would say this. Stacey, get ready for this, okay? You ready for this?
No.
I would say that they are virtually tied at the hip. Huh? You like that? Virtually tied at the hip.
You
got it? Because they're virtual. Zoom. They're not,
yeah, you
not
did
in
it.
Person? Okay.
All right. Let it
good.
Go.
All right. That's my dad joke, okay? So just roll.
You're allowed one per day.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. To me, they as I have witnessed the communication, as I have been hearing that all things have been fantastic between Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron, they have really, really been able to get on the same page relatively quickly with all things being considered. And I think that the excitement is that this offense and the way that it can be operated, there shouldn't be any reason for this group to not be able to dial it in and be firing on all cylinders starting week one. I know everybody's worried about that. I know that everybody is concerned about the ability of this offense and Shane Waldron as a first-time play caller, everybody learning a new system. But I think you have a veteran enough group, and obviously with your quarterback, as long as your quarterback understands the reads, the checks, the understanding, the whys of how everything is coming together, that's really the most important thing. And Shane Waldron and Russell Wilson have been working great together. The relationship has been off to a great start. And in terms of where they're at or where Russell Wilson's at with this offense and understanding what Shane Waldron wants out of it, I think everybody should be extremely happy about where they're at. And hopefully they will get together here soon in person and just continue to keep building upon that.
All right, Naomi Osaka opens up an important conversation about mental health. Plus, Bradley Beal has an amazing response to fans harassing players during the NBA playoffs, and you're going to want to hear this. Don't go anywhere. It's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
So many things to talk about in the timeline right now, including a rumor you're going to want to hear that just came out about Alex Rodriguez and the Timberwolves. It might be what you think it's going to be. Before I get to that, Bradley Beal sounded off. He was asked about all of the stuff that's happening with several fans, if you want to call them that, in the stands during NBA playoffs, throwing things at athletes, or in the case of Trae Young, spitting on Trae Young. And those fans have been, at the time, removed from the arena. A couple of them have been banned from it. I know one of them was facing serious charges. But Bradley Beal, asked about it and whether he feels safe, had this to say.
There's a safety. I think, yeah, we should be protected as players because we're not able to retaliate and respond in ways in which normal human beings would do, you know, but we have a job and career, make a lot of money that, you know, we have to protect. So, but I would like to see the league and, you know, some of these arenas definitely have a little bit more of a, I guess, safer and protect the players type environment, but I wouldn't say less safe. Nah, I think I don't want to use my hood slurm, but these hands work.
This is what I've been saying. So many of these people are so cowardly, and you know for a fact that they wouldn't go up there. And then I've seen people try to say, like, oh, these players are soft. Bradley Beal saying, no, I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm not, I don't feel unsafe. I can handle myself, but it's disrespectful and it's horrible behavior and it doesn't have a place in this game. Like, it's not players being soft because people think that these people that are throwing things should be punished or taken out. It's just that, what the heck are you doing? You're ruining this experience for everyone else, and it's completely inappropriate.
Well, you are, but the other thing that Bradley Beal was talking about as well in that interview was saying that, look, I can fight somebody. My hands work just fine, and nobody is going to want to approach me in that way. But also, we have a job to do. Mm-hmm. We have millions of dollars that we are afforded to play this game. We are being given a tremendous opportunity at a livelihood that is life-altering, and we're not willing to sacrifice that, right? To sacrifice that, and you have these people that are taking advantage of that because we will be in a position to potentially lose our jobs, our livelihood, if we respond, if we react. And I think that's an awful place to be in when you're talking about athletes and you're talking about, you know, fan interaction. It should be a positive thing. It should be a fun environment. Whether it's trash talking, whether it's cheering and having fun at the arena, it should be a wholesome activity that we can all enjoy together rather than seeing a few knuckleheads completely ruin it mm-hmm. for the rest of us. If they continue down this road, I mean, you know, I saw Michael Bumpus put out a tweet, you know, saying should, you know, NBA arenas put up glass like they do in NHL hockey games, right? That would be insane. But at some point, if you do this enough, the league is going to have to go to extreme measures to ensure the safety of their players. I don't think we'll ever get that far down the road, but when you see this in succession of one another, it's really, really frustrating to see people act this way when the majority, 99% of the state of the stadium, of the arena, are just there to enjoy the game. Stop ruining it for the rest of us, is all I got to say.
All right, before I move on to the two bits of breaking news that we just had, one concerning the Timberwolves, one concerning the Seattle Mariners and T-Mobile Park, second story here about Naomi Osaka, second-ranked women's tennis player in the world, a star in tennis, one that's driving viewers to this event, the French Open, has withdrawn. That news broke yesterday. She has since released a statement. And Jake, I think this brings up an important conversation that needs to be had and that has been being had for a while about mental health of athletes. I think there's this kind of crossroads where we praise toughness and grit and then also don't leave a lot of room for where mental health and taking care of your mental health should fit. And I think way too often we label taking care of your mental health as not being tough, which is such a value in the arena of sports. And it may be, and this is kind of where I fall in with Naomi Osaka, that there isn't the same approach for everyone, that every single athlete does not have to have the same approach.
I agree with that overall sentiment. One of the other things that Osaka had talked about was that there were times where she would be going into a match and she would have to deal with the media or talk to the media, and they're asking her negative questions, right? And she wasn't saying that she didn't want to answer negative questions or ever have to answer negative questions, but when you're in that mental space and that mindset where you're focused on a match and you're wanting to perform at your best, that is where you want to be thinking positively. You want to think that you're invincible, you're indestructible heading into a match, heading into a game. That's why in football, I've rarely, if ever, seen anybody get interviewed before a game. It's just a rare thing to see, something that I never experienced in my football career. Everything was always post-game. Even those were really hard and difficult to manage. And so with Osaka, I think that you're seeing her advocate for herself, advocate for other athletes in terms of trying to change the landscape of maybe how things are done. And obviously, as we've said before, mental health is such an important factor in addressing for everybody and making sure that everybody can handle the stress. But it is part of the job. It is part of the gig. And I can get on board with maybe changing some of the ways you go about it. I am just... What I'm nervous about, Stacey, is I'm not accusing Osaka of not being truthful in how she, what she's saying. I fully support her in this situation, fully believe her, and I am behind her. But I am one, I am left wondering, what are the changes that she wants to see made in order for it to be a better, more conducive environment for athletes to have a better for it to be better in the mental health area, right? That to me is what I want to know, what changes she deems are better for her and for other athletes in general. Because as you said, not everything works for every single person. So are the changes that Osaka's going to want to make, or is that beneficial to a Venus Williams or, you know, whoever else is participating? So that's the part that I'm very curious about as the conversation progresses forward.
There is a rumor that A-Rod wants to move the Timberwolves to Seattle. That deal has not closed yet. There's a pending, I don't know if it's a lawsuit or a complaint filed by a minority shareholder who is, there's a separate issue there going on, which allowed all of us to see components of the deal. There was nothing in the deal that legally prevents Alex Rodriguez and his new co-owner, Mark Lohr, from moving the team out of Minnesota. This is from Charlie Walters of the Pioneer Press, published today. There's buzz now that Kevin Garnett, who is said to be worth more than $200 million, will be heavily involved in the Timberwolves basketball department if he joins franchise investors Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lohr if and when they gain full control in 2023. The word is Garnett, the ex-Timberwolf, wants the franchise to remain in Minnesota, but Rodriguez wants to move it to Seattle, where he played for seven seasons.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, you look at Alex Rodriguez potentially bringing basketball here to Seattle. Not the pairing that I would have, that I would pick. I would not have anticipated that, Stacey. The thing that I will always say when it comes to this situation is I don't want a single fan base to have to go through what we went through here in Seattle. I would much rather have an expansion team here in Seattle with the NBA. We know that they want to do it at some point in time down the road within the next five seasons. And we've had Brian Windhorst on from ESPN to discuss that possibility and that very likely possibility. But if this is the way that we're going to get the Supersonics back here in Seattle, I'm not going to be overly upset about it. I'll just tell you that. I'll be more excited about having the Sonics here in Seattle, but I would love for it to not be at the expense of another city and have them go
losing
through what
team.
We went through.
Exactly. My expectations have changed for the Mariners, and the reason why is kind of surprising me. Plus, we've got some breaking Mariners news. It's all coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
T-Mobile Park is going to increase capacity starting June 14th. They are going to, let's see, the approved plan is to almost 31,000 seats out of obviously about 47,000 seats. So private suites, Diamond Club, and All-Star Club are available at full capacity for fully vaccinated guests. Although it sounds like even for non-vaccinated sections that just overall capacity for the stadium is going to open up. So if you have not been able to get to a Mariners game because you can only go on a weekend and with the small crowd, it's been selling out. Good news. More seats are opening up.
Yeah, they are opening up, and it's interesting to watch the dynamic in terms of how they're able to do it, in terms of vaccinated sections, non-vaccinated sections, what the capacities look like and all that. You saw recently the Madison Square Garden, right? They were only allowing only vaccinated people into the arena in attempt to try and really pack the house. So obviously, as we evolve and as we see things, you know, continue to progress over the next month or so, as mandates here in the state of Washington are going to change, going to be interested to see how that affects seating as well, not just for the Mariners, for the Seahawks down the road as well. But it is nice to be able to see people gathering together again, people more and more capacity. So I think those are all very, very exciting things.
Now, and just as a note, all of the additional capacity sold to the kind of socially distanced section. So people that are not in the vaccinated sections, those are still going to be in those pods of 1 to 6 seats. So just as a heads up, if you're buying in a group and you're not sitting in the vaccinated section, that still is going to be in a socially distanced smaller group. But there are more seats opening up in those sections. Speaking of the Mariners, Jake, I find myself changing my expectation of where this club is going to be this year. And it's not like to the wild card. It's not a playoffs kind of conversation, but it is an overall performance kind of expectation, particularly on offense. And I was thinking, why? Because the reason I've changed my expectations is because guys are getting back healthier. These guys were here to start the season. I mean, Ty France getting back healthier, Jake Fraley getting back, Marco Gonzalez is going to be returning tonight. All of those guys were there to start the season, and it's not like my expectations were high. But I think what I realized is that this team is clearly better with those guys in it, particularly Ty France. And you can already see his impact on the offense.
No doubt. And they don't have the depth that you would like them to have. I mean, that was a big part of the conversation is you watch them struggle at the plate. You watch them struggle through all the injuries that there really was no cushion. There was no leeway in terms of the success of this team being able to rely on multiple big league type of bats. And as of right now, you're having some guys that are learning on the job, and you've got a few key starters that can really contribute at the plate to help you win ball games. And you look at your starting rotation as well. When Marco Gonzalez goes down, James Paxton goes down, you have Mercevich goes down. I mean, you just have all these guys. Margavich.
Oh, Margavich.
Right? Yeah, Margavich just goes down. You lose so much, right? And you don't have the depth behind it. So I think that when you're talking about the Mariners being able to come out of the other side of this, it's a positive development because they were successful at the start of the season, Stacey. It wasn't necessarily eye-popping performances. They were winning by the skin of their teeth in a lot of these games, but they were winning games. And you see Ty France come back. You see the impact that that has. You see Marco Gonzalez getting his first start tonight. I really hope that this is the start of Marco getting back to his 2019 form versus what we saw earlier the 2020 version of Marco Gonzalez, because what we saw at the beginning of this season here in 2021 really wasn't a great start for Marco. And he's only going to pitch a max of 4 innings tonight, so we're not going to see him go deep into innings, but I think it'll be really important for him to have a good, positive first outing.
Now, there is one player that's going to be kind of moving in the opposite direction. It is Kyle Lewis, who had to leave the game after re-injuring the same knee he injured in spring training. So we don't have an update on that yet. Scott Servais will be joining us in less than 10 minutes for the Scott Servais show, so we'll certainly be asking about that. I am, again, because the expectation isn't playoffs, I'm more worried about Kyle Lewis's long-term health. Like, I hope that this isn't a chronic issue and that it is just, you know, unfortunately for him, a series of unlucky accidents. Oh, we're getting some tech issues there with Jake. We'll have Jake rejoin us in just a couple minutes here. DJ, when you're looking ahead at where this team is going to be without Kyle Lewis, and Jake, feel free to speak up if we have you back also.
I think you have me back.
We have you back.
Beautiful.
Jake's here.
Okay, awesome. We were talking about Kyle Lewis and his injury. To me, Stacey, as you look at that and you evaluate that, it really does start to concern me when it comes to chronic injuries. He's already dealt with a significant injury earlier in his career with a torn ACL. Then you talk about this bone bruise, and if it's a similar thing, now you start to really worry about chronic knee issues. And with someone of this age, of this caliber, you know, having to run as powerfully as he does in the outfield, it does make you worried. It definitely makes you worried. And this is also a halt to Kyle Lewis's progress, because he was just starting to, Stacey, not necessarily turn into a superstar version of himself in terms of power and home runs, but in terms of him finding a groove, getting base hits, getting on base, he was finally turning the corner in the right direction, and then he has this injury. So I think that it's a big concern for you as a whole, and if Kyle Lewis is indeed out for a while, you could easily see Taylor Trammell get a call up.
All right, Mariners insider for 710 ESPN Seattle, Shannon Dreyer is going to be joining us next, and we are bringing on Scott Servais to ask him the latest about his ball club. That's coming your way in just a few minutes on Jake and Stacey.